With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Drivers, start your engines!
Hit the pace car! What for? Because you hit every other damn thing out there, I want you to be perfect!
When I'm driving, I got a guy on the radio who talks to me. You can't see him, but he talks to me.
He didn't slam you, he didn't bump you, he didn't nudge you, he rubbed you. And rubbing sun is racing.
Hey, race fans, welcome to the Hoobazoo Radio Network and welcome to Drafting the Circuits. My name is Frank Santorowski. I'll be your host for the next hour as we go over this past weekend of racing. Before I do that, let me introduce you to the panel I have in the studio tonight. With me is Mr. Gray Warren from Richard Childress Racing, Mr. Seth Eggert from Motorsports Tribune, and my good friend Richard Uden, race engineer. How is everybody tonight?
Doing well.
Doing good.
Very good, thank you.
All right, so we're coming off a pretty good weekend of racing. Formula One had the week off. IndyCar had not one but two races with a duel in Detroit, and NASCAR was at Pocono. Those two IndyCar races were won by Scott Dixon in race one. Race two, Ryan Hunter-Reay comes through for the win, his first win in a couple of years. But at Pocono, Martin Truex Jr. took the win. And it's a kind of a mind-boggling statistic that 21 of the last 29 Cup races were won by just three different drivers. Martin Truex, who won the race, and Kyle Busch, and Kevin Harvick. Single car three guys dominating the series. So, Seth, you've got some other stats about this, too.
Yes, on top of that, if you take out the unpredictable nature of super speedway racing, they've won 19 of the past 22 races, and that comes out to about 90.5%. And also, some other stats that I have, just I was looking at something, and just comparing the crew chiefs, Cole Pearn, Adam Stevens, Pearn being Truex's crew chief, Stevens being Kyle Busch's crew chief, to another crew chief, Hall of Famer Ray Evernham. At this point in Evernham's career, they all have about the same number of wins, the same number of top fives, the same number of top tens. The only difference is the number of poles and one championship each, which it's just mind-boggling. Not only the fact that three drivers have won almost 75% of races in the past year, but that their crew chiefs are also mirroring the career of Ray Evernham.
Interesting stats. So let's dig into this Pocono race here, right? So we had Martin Truex. It didn't dominate the race, but he was there when it needed to be. So, Gray, you pay close attention to the race. So let's kind of like break down Pocono bit by bit and talk about the race.
Well, you know, it was still like we thought. Kyle Busch and Kevin Harvick show up, and they're pretty much the class of the field. I think Harvick probably led the most laps in the race, and just for some late race strategy, could have very well ended up winning the race again. Kind of put him behind a little bit, and then again the car with clean air, which was Truex, was able to get out front on the last restart and drive away from the field. Good run for the Chevrolet of Kyle Larson. He showed some strength there. I think the Hendrick cars showed a little bit of strength in the race there. Jimmy Johnson and Alex Bowman ran in the top 10 most of the time. Unfortunately, was collapsed in a crash. But he had a good run. So some, the second race in a row, we've seen a little bit of a response with Chevrolet teams. They're running a little bit better. So look to see that continue this weekend at Michigan. But Truex was able to parlay some strategy, some good pit work, and get the lead, and was able to hold off Larson and Kyle Busch and Harvick there at the end to get the win. So, again, it's I heard people talking about the top four at Pocono may come down to our top four going into the final race at
Homestead.
Homestead. Yeah, and that was kind of the same scenario we talked about last year going into it with Larson being the fourth guy coming into that too, and he's by far had the best Chevrolet all year too. So we'll see how that kind of transpires as the season goes on. But right now, you got like we said, three dominant teams there that are pulling off most of the wins and run good and run strong every week. We're going to Michigan weekend. Larson's on three race win streak there, and I'm sure he's had that date circled on his calendar for a long time to go to Michigan and see what they can do. So I'm kind of looking forward to this weekend to see what'll happen.
Yeah, that's
and
really
on top
interesting.
Of that,
go ahead, Seth.
As I was going to say, on top of that, the streak that Larson's going for, four wins in a row at Michigan, the last time that happened was in the 1980s with Bill Elliott. But going back to Pocono real quick, Truex got the lead because of a series of late race incidents that Larson initiated when he turned Derek Coat. At the time, Harvick was leading, and he had a pretty commanding lead over both Kyle Busch and Martin Truex Jr. So, in part, Truex could kind of thank Larson for giving him the lead at the end of the race.
Yeah, he sure could, yeah. So, and the other thing I was going to mention was, we had talked last week after Kyle Busch had checked off every track on the schedule with a win, that Harvick had a chance to equal him this year. Because Harvick is the two tracks he's missing are Pocono and Kentucky. So Harvick fell a little short here, but the good news for Harvick is Pocono comes up again in a month, because Pocono has that short schedule in between, and then Kentucky's right there too. So Harvick still has a shot to equal Kyle Busch's record of checking every track off with a win. But while he fell short, he sure ran pretty well on Sunday.
Yeah, I mean, to me, he was the favorite until just the circumstances late in the race kind of put him a little bit behind. And of course, at Pocono, track position is critical. And if you can get out front and break away and get your car in clean air, you can make it very tough on your competitors.
And Seth, your thoughts on Harvick? Is he going to be able to maybe win the July Pocono race and? And maybe come back to Kentucky and mash Kyle Busch here?
Well, he might win Pocono. Kentucky, on the other hand, he hasn't always run well at Kentucky. Granted, it's only been on the schedule for about 6 or 7 years now. But he just hasn't shown the kind of 1.5 mile cookie-cutter prowess at Kentucky the way he is able to run at Atlanta and Texas and Charlotte.
To his credit, Kentucky's a little different now since they reconfigured Turn 3 and whatnot. So I don't know if that helps them or hurts them. Anyway, it's definitely something to chase for Harvick, because again, it'll be neat to see two guys do this in the same year.
That it will. Although there are some that are trying to classify the Charlotte Roval later in the year as being another new venue. There's a little bit of debate as to whether or not that is, but that's another conversation for another time.
Well, I would tend to agree that, yeah, that's a different track. It's like winning the Indy Grand Prix and the Indy 500. That's two different animals, yeah. So I would say once they add the Charlotte Roval infield road course to there, that's another track that somebody needs to check off the box.
Agreed.
Gray, you agree?
Particularly, yeah. It's a different layout, different course. It's at the same venue, but it's a different animal. So yeah, I think and we're splitting hairs over that too. Win at Charlotte's, win at Charlotte's. Just like if you look at Tony Stewart's Tony Stewart has won races on the road course at Daytona, and it goes in with his total victories at Daytona. It just depends on how you want to look at it. I don't think it's still winning at Charlotte Motor Speedway. I'm sure people will want to put an asterisk beside it, and some won't. But we'll wait and see what happens when we get to that at the end of September.
All right. So, any penalty reports coming out of the race at Pocono?
There was one from the Xfinity Series. Kyle Busch, the race winner in the Xfinity Series, he failed to meet the heights on the front of the car and was docked 10 owner points. Now, they also ran that restricted aero package in the Xfinity Series race at Pocono. It really didn't change the racing by much other than slowing the speeds down. Otherwise, they are running the same package at Michigan this weekend in the Xfinity Series.
Now, there's some talk that we may see this restricted package come to play later in the Cup level at some tracks. I don't know how strong that talk is. I don't know what tracks they're looking at, but what are you hearing?
I've heard Pocono, Michigan, and Indianapolis.
Yeah, I wouldn't know unless they can get a good handle on the second Pocono and the second Michigan race on it. I wouldn't see them doing it at Indianapolis because Indianapolis is in the chase this year.
Yeah, it's the cutoff for the regular season.
Oh, is it a cutoff for the regular season?
It's the final race of the regular season.
I got it a week later, but. Yeah, they could possibly do it there. I would think, to me, the best case scenario would be to do it at the second Michigan race, and that's kind of what I've been hearing around the shop. So, but we'll just have to wait and see. No announcement has been forthcoming yet, so we'll just have to see what happens.
I mean, in any case, this the new package is fairly well received at Charlotte. The racing was certainly slower, but the racing was certainly better from a lot of accounts. So, can you see NASCAR actually making this move? Kind of, it's almost like they're changing the rules in the middle of the game, which they've done before. But do you think it's a good thing or a bad thing that if we, go ahead and try this package, during the regular season, in the season that's already started?
I don't see nothing wrong with it. It's the same for everybody. It's a level playing field. I mean, if you go out there and say, okay, boys, we're going to go to second Michigan race and we're going to apply this, it's the same for everybody out there. The cream's still going to rise to the top. The cars that have the best mechanical setup are going to come to the forefront and win the race anyway. We saw that at in the All-Star race. It wasn't a big surprise that Harvick ran strong and ran well there. So I think anything that a sanctioning body can do to enhance competition, and it's a hit or miss proposition. They're damned if they do and damned if they don't. Some things will work, some things won't. But you really don't know how well things will work until you actually put them in practice. You know, we discussed this same thing about Indianapolis last week. The new package there didn't produce the kind of racing that we had seen over the last half decade. Really close quartered with a lot of lead changes and that kind of thing. And this is one of the things that is probably, you know, one of those cause and effect things. It probably helps at some tracks and hurts at others. And I think basically you don't know what's going to happen until actually you get out there and get a whole racetrack full of cars. You can go do all the testing you want with only a few.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com. And live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Cars on the racetrack at a time. But, you know, the proof's in the pudding at Indy when the entire field got out there on the racetrack. And then, too, the unforeseen high temperatures of race day kind of threw a little bit of a kink in it. And then, again, we were spoiled at the type of racing we had seen over the years. And maybe that's something that IndyCar needs to do with their Speedway package, do a little bit of tweaking to kind of get the racing back on the Speedways like we've accustomed to. But yeah, you can't, you know, it's a compromise. You're going to run, it's going to work well at some tracks, and some tracks it's not. So, but again, NASCAR's in the same boat. Both sanctioning bodies are doing what they can to give the fans the best show possible, and you gotta applaud both bodies for doing that. But like you said, it's an experiment at best in some cases.
All right, Seth, what are your thoughts on this?
Well, I'd rather them do it in an actual race than to try to have a test session doing this. And the reason why I'm saying that is, in the later years of the Gen 5 Car Tomorrow car, they had tried doing simulation races and other things in testing, and NASCAR eventually found out that the teams and the drivers, granted, everyone can be selfish, was just trying to point NASCAR in a direction that would benefit themselves instead of the overall product.
That's true. Yeah, that's sandbag. Yeah, no doubt about it. We used to see similar things back when we used to go testing at Daytona in January prior to the Daytona 500. All the teams would go down there, and you would have teams go down there and deliberately sandbag because they knew that NASCAR would make concessions if they howled enough. And I'll give you a perfect example. Prior to 2000 and 2001 and 2002, they would make concessions for cars, either with spoiler height or things like that. And basically it was done to appease another manufacturer to so-called level the playing field. And it was artificial because teams went down there and deliberately, you know, sandbag, and it's a little bit of gamesmanship. Now everybody's got the same rule package, and that's one thing that led to the car tomorrow. Well, we went to common templates, you know, for the cars that we have now. So yeah, Seth, you're exactly right. It's going to be better if they actually do it in a race where all the factors come into play. You have long stints, you get tire wear involved in it rather than go to a track and just do testing with a few cars out there and do simulations. This will bring this should bring every contingency that a team is going to face during the course of a full race out into play. So yeah, it's a better test bed for rules package.
You know, and I personally I think that the improving the product on the track, improving the quality of the racing, does a whole lot more to engage fans than the artificial things like the stage wins and the chase and this and that. But just, you know, even if the speeds are slower, because, you know, hey, you know, if you're watching a race, can you tell the difference between a, you know, 180 miles an hour to 190 miles an hour? No, not really. But if the cars are close and the cars are fighting, it's a much better, compelling thing to watch, and better racing is really the way to engage fans more so than the artificial things like stage races and these other sort of things in NASCAR. Well, come on,
fans want to see side by side racing. They want to see lead changes.
Exactly. Yep.
They want to see lead changes at the front of the field. That's what they want to see, and that, you know, like I just got through saying, IndyCar had the perfect formula for success at Indianapolis, and that is what has led, you know, somewhat, probably mostly to the resurgence in the Indy 500. You remember 12, 15 years ago, the Indy 500 was having its difficulties filling the stands, and they were of empty seats at Indy, and that, you know, that of course there were a lot of other circumstances to go along with that, the split, then the IRL thing, and you know, and all that coming about, and yet it turned people off. But you look at what's happened in the last 7 to 8 years, the Indy 500 has undergone a rebirth, and they're filling the place. Well, they don't completely fill it up, but it's not many empty seats there. And they've done that because of the formula of racing they've had. They've had, you know, what, 50-some lead changes in a lot of years. And I'm not talking about lead changes that take place on pit stop exchanges and things like that. I'm talking about lead changes at the front of the field on the track. And, I mean, in several races we've seen over the last several years, there would be several lead changes unofficially that didn't happen at the line, that happened all around the track. So yeah, you know, I think NASCAR needs to get back in that kind of situation, because that's what the fans want to see. They want to see passes and lead changes at the front of the field. That's what gets the fans up out of their seat and gets them on their feet.
Exactly.
You made a very good.
Go ahead, Richard.
You make a good point. At the end of the day, why did they introduce stage racing? It's just trying to manipulate it. It's a bad package. I mean, you can like stage racing, you cannot. I mean, it's just a way of throwing a guaranteed caution. I mean, the only place it really makes a difference are at super speedways when people are desperate to get points towards the end of the season. But if the package was good and the racing was good and it was entertaining, it was close, you wouldn't need the stages. So the stages were like a band-aid over a problem. And hopefully this new aero package is a real fix for certain tracks. Obviously, when you get to, you know, your Richmonds and your Bristols and your Martinsvilles, you know, that's maybe a different story. But they've got their own unique characteristics, which they may want to look at in some way. But I think that, you know, that this is hopefully a proper fix. The stage racing was diff, yeah, whatever.
Yeah, and you're right. It was designed to create a sense of urgency, you know, and get these guys to race for points and race for positions up, you know, get into the top 10 and improve your position through the top 10. And at some tracks, it has the desired effect. The guys get to scrambling and racing to garner those points. But yeah, but if you've got where cars are tightly bunched and very competitive, you know, the fans are going to love it, just like they did the All-Star. The All-Star race was a compelling show. It's very good because you had cars that could move up and down through the field. They could be leading for a few laps and then get passed and fall all the way back to sixth and then make their way back through the field to the front again. And that's kind of what you want to see, the cars be able to do that and be able to stay in contact with one another. The thing that it kind of negated that aero advantage that the lead car has in clean air. The cars were able to run down the leader again. You know, they could get to racing two and three wide behind the leader, and the leader could break away just a little bit. But when they cars got lined up single file again, they could quickly run that leader back down and challenge him again. So that to me, was one of the most encouraging signs that I saw with the package at Charlotte. Now, we've all agreed it probably needs a little bit of tweaking, some things. I wouldn't tweak with the aero stuff on the car. Maybe something with gearing or in the engines, or maybe a little something with the throttle bodies or something with a different plate, maybe to give the cars a little bit of acceleration. I think we're headed in the right direction. And I think as long as they keep working toward it, you know, slowing the cars down is the formula. You know, people, like you said, Frank, they're not going to tell the difference between running 100 and 185 and 175. What you will tell the difference is the cars can go into the corner side by side at those lower speeds that they can't do at the higher speed. So, yeah, and that's going to – we've always known that was the formula. You're going to see better racing if you slow the cars down.
Exactly, and better racing is what's going to help NASCAR kind of rebound. I mean, NASCAR's in a slump. There's no doubt about that. But improving the racing rather than improving the show is really going to help. So, but we're out to Michigan this weekend, where Mr. Chip Ganassi guy, Kyle Larson, has won the last three. Who was the first pick to pick Larson to win four?
I'll go for it.
Okay.
You gonna take Larson?
I'll take Larson.
All right, Gray. Gray, who do you like?
I'm torn between Truex and Harvick because they both ran good at California, very similar track to Michigan. But I think I'm gonna go. I'm gonna say Harvick rebounds, picks up.
All right, so you got Harvick. Richard, who do you like?
Busch.
Kyle or Kurt?
Kurt.
Or George or George W? All right.
I think George could be struggling a little bit, the poor boy. But
yeah, it could be, yeah. So so you've left me with picking Eric Amarola. Why not? So... But let's talk about the IndyCar. IndyCar raced two races in one weekend. Race number one, we saw Scott Dixon come to the forefront after Marco Andretti won his first pole since 2013. His first pole on a road course in his career, which is kind of mind-boggling. But at the end, Marco just kind of faded. And it was Scott Dixon taking the win. Ryan Hunter Ray second. I forget who was third there. Who was third? Did anybody know? Okay. So race two got off with a bang with the pace car driver hitting the wall. And that poor guy, Mark Royce, the executive from GM, taking a beating on social media. The other guy that took a beating on social media was Alexander Rossi, who dominated the race, didn't quite have enough for his teammate, Ryan Hunter-Reay. Ryan Hunter-Reay did the three-stop strategy and played it to perfection. The three-stop strategy does not always work, but because sometimes the yellows mess that up. But Hunter-Reay played that to perfection, had fresher tires, lighter fuel load at the end, put some pressure on Rossi. Rossi ends up locking up the brakes, going on the escape road, and then the front tire disintegrates. Rossi ends up 12th, Hunter Ray wins his first race since Pocono 2015. Willpower makes the podium. Still leads the points. You know, poor old Rossi, he had a swing from taking a tremendous points lead to driving to third in the points in the race in Detroit. So, Richard, you watch this. So what are your thoughts on this the kind of nutty back and forth thing in Detroit?
Sorry, I didn't. It broke up a little bit there. I didn't get you that question. Could you ask it again, please?
Okay, so you watch the race in Detroit, right? Ray race two, race two. Ryan Hunter Ray played the strategy to perfection, put some pressure on his young teammate Rossi. Rossi ends up split a tire, and I just want your commentary on the race. What you saw, what you liked.
Yeah,
what you did.
Sure. Some of the bits I did hear you say yes, you're very right. The three strop strategy there isn't, you know, it relies on a lot of variables on the yellows and full course yellows, and it worked out perfectly for him. You know, one in five or whatever it may be would work. You look like a hero when in reality, you know, you were playing, you know, trying to play for a bit of luck there. But it was interesting from some of the comments that Rossi was making. You know, when he actually sat down and looked through some of the data, it shows you the fine margins that these drivers work with. His comments were along the lines of, as he was having to defend, he wasn't being aggressive in his defending, but he was being assertive, I think is probably the best word. So that resulted in, for certain corners, taking a slightly different line just to nip in, you know, just to nip, you know, Hunter Ray, to prevent him from diving up the inside. And on a road course...
With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+ terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Just like that, you have very, very uneven surfaces. So what that was doing was, it was meaning that you're seeing different loads under braking through the tires, and some of the corners were unloading, and then you see this locking of the wheel effect. And then what happens is, once you lock a tire and you lock a wheel and you get a flat spot on the tire, if you do the same thing again, it will happen at the same point. And it becomes a vicious circle. And every time you lock and you hit that flat spot, you damage the tire, you know, incrementally. And unfortunately, as he kept on that line, it caused that failure, which you saw there. Now, in hindsight, you know, if he'd backed off and just let Hunter Ray through and finish second, he'd still be in the championship. But that's difficult for a driver to do, especially a driver who, in previous years, people have noted his talent, whereas this year I think people are starting to see him as naturally a title contender, and he wants to try and assert his dominance and win these races and sort of put a stake in the ground. So it's difficult for him to back off and to let somebody through, and especially a teammate. You know, you never want to let a teammate through. Although, in reality, he was only quicker purely on strategy rather than pure pace, I think, because at the start of that race, Rossi dominated it.
Rossi had that thing in the bag until, you know, Hunter Ray's strategy, you know, put him in a better position at the end. But as I look at this thing, right, and as I look at the last couple of races, so you've got Hunter Ray winning race two, Dixon winning race one, you've got Will Power winning the Indy GP and the 500. And if you look at a guy like Will Power, who's kind of like played second fiddle to Simon Pagenaud and then Joseph Newgarden, now he's trying to assert himself, say, hey, you know what, I'm not done yet. I'm the team leader here, right? And now you see a guy like Hunter Ray, who got a second place on Saturday and a win on, I'm sorry, second place on Saturday and a win on Sunday. He's saying, you know, he's played in Rossi's shadow for last year. She's like, I'm not done yet. You've got these more established guys trying to assert themselves, and they've got a car that's reminiscent of what they used to drive, and they probably got a little better experience with this type of car with the lower downforce and the under tray. And I just think we're in store for a pretty good championship battle down the line, because this thing right now is anybody's game, and Dixon is right there to play spoiler to anybody that wants to claim this thing.
Of course. And the old adage in any form of motorsport really is that the first person you've got to beat is your teammate. You know, if you finish second in a championship, if you're beaten by your teammate, you might as well finish last in the championship in many, many ways. So you can only beat the person that you're up against. And you look at, you know, Penske, they're the, you know, dominant powerhouse in terms of their driver lineup. I mean, you look at those three drivers they've got there, and you know, arguably the four drivers, you know, for Indy. You know, they would be in all fairness, maybe you'd take Scott Dixon out of the equation, but they'd pretty much be the lead driver for any other team, any one of those three or four drivers. And you've seen the Andretti team starting to come through, and they're starting to, I think it's fair to say, certainly in the time that I've been really paying attention to IndyCar, that the shift of the second team has maybe moved from Ganassi over to Andretti in the last year or so. And, you know, I know Scott Dixon's still there doing what he does incredibly well at Ganassi, but it's not in the days when they had Dario there and some of those guys, you know, really dominating and pushing Penske hard. You know, so yeah, you've got to try and assert your authority on the team, and you've got to get to a position where, you know, you are the number one driver, and all of the resources of that team go into you and you alone. So that sort of mindset, especially within the Penske organization, is going to be fascinating. You know, they're lucky in a way, I think, that there aren't more dominant teams around that can push Penske, because, you know, those guys, you know, Pagenaud, Newgarden and Power know that the best place for them to be to win a championship is by far and away Penske. They don't want to, you know, there's no other teams where they can go and realistically push for a championship in as they can where they are.
Exactly, yeah. So now, towards the bottom of the field, we had a new guy in the series, you know, Connecticut-born Santino Ferrucci, who's, you know, pegged as possibly the next American Formula One driver because he's in the Haas F1 development program. And, Seth, you were paying close attention to him in his debut. It wasn't great. It wasn't, you know, wasn't ugly. But what are your thoughts, Seth?
Well, it could have been better. Honestly, in the first race, just wrong place, wrong time. He ended up getting dumped by Charlie Kimball in the fastest part of the track. And my personal opinion, we're lucky that when he went spinning and then skipped over the rumble strip there, that he didn't catch anybody while he was airborne. But in the second race, he did make a rookie mistake on cold tires leaving pit road. Did a 360, destroyed the front wing, had to come back down and get that replaced. But otherwise, it wasn't the best weekend, but it was a very respectable weekend that he had. He got a lot of seat time, which is what essentially the plan was. He is subbing, or at least at Detroit, was subbing for Pietro Fittipaldi, who is still recovering from breaking both of his legs. So all in all, it could have been worse, but it was a decent weekend, at least if you're looking at it from the standpoint of the seat time and the experience he gained.
Yeah, I mean, this guy, he's been signed by Haas, and he's running a full season of Formula 2. But I mean, Haas put him in a Formula 1 car for a test early last year, but other than that, he's just in a simulator and running Formula 2. So, good on him getting out there. I don't know how much he paid Dale for the ride there, or you know, he's again, you know, comes from a family with some wealth, but the kid has considerable talent, and it wasn't terrible, but the results were not great.
Yeah, I mean, I think if he's a realistic candidate and wants to be considered for that Haas drive, you know, you probably would have liked to have seen a little bit more from him this weekend. He was, I don't want to overcall somebody disappointing, because, geez, you do a damn sight better job than I ever could. But, yeah, it wasn't, wow, that was amazing. You know, it was like, yeah, okay.
Yeah, he did his thing. He qualified 17th or 18th right there, you know, towards the back of the field, you know. But he was there, you know, you want to say he took care of the car until he wrecked it. But anyway, you know, we'll see if this helps him or hurts him in his quest to be the next American in F1. But it certainly was not a banner performance. But anyway, otherwise, you know, so we're on to Texas. And this is a grueling stretch for the IndyCar teams, where they have the IndyCar Grand Prix, then they have pole qualifying, then they have the 500, and then they have two races in Detroit, and then they have another short week where they're racing Saturday night at Texas. So this is like the toughest stretch for the teams there, because IndyCar teams, unlike NASCAR teams, don't have separate crews at the shop and in the at the race. You're talking the same guys are doing both. So a lot of travel, all these consecutive weekends. We're on to Texas, and conventional wisdom would tell you, looking at the last couple of Speedway results, the Chevrolet cars are going to be strong. So Gray, what do you think we're going to see in Texas when we get the Indy cars there with this new package? At Phoenix, it was a bit underwhelming, but it wasn't as bad as the first two Phoenix races.
It depends. It's going to depend on the tire that they take there. If they see what kind of tire degradation they have there. I don't know that we're going to see a race with a lot of lead changes. I just don't think this particular package right now is conducive to that. These cars seem to be a little bit of a handful to drive. They were at Indy, of course. That was compounded by the high temperatures. Don't know what we'll see at Texas there, but again, it's a night race, so we'll see somewhat cooler than if they had to race in the daytime. So
I don't know, man. Greg.
I think the jury's still out. You know, we'll just have to see if these cars can race side by side and be competitive, or we're going to see a processional race. It's just too many things going today. To me, the big things are going to be the tire they go with, and it being a night race.
Now, oddly enough, the projected temperature for the start of the race in Texas at 8 p.m. is still 94 degrees. But, Richard, I wanted to ask you, now, we've seen Chevrolet be pretty good on the ovals, right, at Phoenix and at Indianapolis, mm-hmm. and perhaps maybe Texas. Chevrolet cars have been pretty good at the permanent road courses, that being Alabama and again the road course at Indianapolis. But the Honda cars have just been dominant at the tight street circuits at Long Beach, St. Pete, and last week in Detroit. So, you being an engineer, what do you think is that engine that makes it a bit different, because we have a common aero package, so it's not the aero package. So what is it about the Honda compared to the Chevy that is giving this big sway in the where we have this certain engine is dominant at this type of track and this is that? So what do you think, my man?
It's a difficult question. Thanks.
Well, that I give the difficult questions to you.
Without knowing the exact, setup on these cars and the exact, numbers, should we say, from the data, as you say, you've got similar aero package, so it's nothing to do with that. The physical cars are pretty much identical in terms of suspension and gearbox and all this sort of stuff. So you wouldn't have thought it's gear ratio, because different teams will run different gear ratios naturally. You're probably looking at the engine map, which will be divided by each engine, and also the torque curve of the engine. I mean, every engine, both of those engines will have pretty similar top-end performance. Maybe with the Chevy being slightly higher, as we've seen, with the ovals. But it's how you get there, which could have a lot to do with it. And also, without knowing for certain, there is a phenomenon which I've seen in the past that, as silly as it sounds, some engines just do not work as well over the bumps and over rough surfaces. Maybe it's a timing issue. Maybe it's... I couldn't give you an exact answer, but it does appear, and we'll see how it goes throughout the rest of the season, that those Chevrolet engines just don't work as well on bumpy circuits, as silly as it may sound.
No, it doesn't sound silly, but it's kind of interesting that with a common aero kit, we have disparity and engine disparity. The top of the order is not mixed up. It's like if it's a fast track, it's Chevrolet. If it's a slow track, it's Honda. So,
yeah, my guess would be it's torque map is the prime one, and that leads into your gear ratios naturally. I would say you're probably looking at a torque map issue there.
And that could be a product of the different geometries inside the engine, valve train, camshaft.
I don't know how much of that is sort of predefined by the governing body on there, but yeah. It's actually in a way opposite to what my experience with Honda has been. I mean, back when I worked for Honda when they had their Formula One project in the early 2000s with BAR, our top end was pretty good. We just couldn't get there. We were terrible on acceleration at low end. All they were interested in was high end of the torque curve. Yeah. So it sounds like maybe they've changed their philosophy a little bit over the last, goodness me, 15 years. That's a scary thought. But, it could be that they've just changed their philosophy in how they develop an engine.
And then another thing is induction. NASCAR had similar situations like that. Even when you go back a couple of years, when Toyota's engines were on the open engine side, were very, very strong everywhere they went. And when you went to the plate tracks, the Ford engine was the more powerful engine. So yeah, it's different things how even though these engines are a lot alike in some instances, it's certain things in the way the heads are made, the combustion chambers, little things like that, just how efficient they run in certain circumstances will cause a discrepancy that we see.
All right, so we're on to Texas with IndyCar, so let's make some picks for Texas. Seth, you want to pick Will Power or not?
I was actually going to go with Ed Carpenter.
Okay. You can have Ed Carpenter.
Richard.
I won't go with Ed Carpenter then. Takuma Sato.
Okay, yep. After we talk about how the Hondas are not good on the ovals, yep, that'll work.
Yeah, whatever.
Gray.
The New Garden.
All right. I'm going to go with Will Power. The guy's won at Texas. He's on a roll this year. Yep, if he's hot. I think Will Power is going to take his championship, and we'll see how that goes on down the line. But let's talk about Formula One. Formula One is coming to Canada, which is one of my favorite racetracks. I went to that race in 1979. I want to say Carlos Reutemann won that race. Maybe Villeneuve. Who knows? It was Ferrari track at the time. But that's one of the few real race courses left in F1. When I say real race courses, I mean the ones that aren't so sanitized and taken care of. But let's talk about Canada. Let's talk about Formula One. And Richard, you were telling me about a story where we're trying to Red Bull is trying to steal, or Red Bull, or Toro Rosso rather, is trying to steal Lando from McLaren. And what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, there's been it's not a rumor. It's been pretty much confirmed that, and not huge surprise, that Toro Rosso aren't exactly thrilled with Brendan Hartley's performance. And, you know, for fairness, Brendan Hartley was never meant to be a long-term, replacement for Danny Kvyat. So they're looking to get somebody in there with a bit of ability, or a bit of potential, should we say. And Lando Norris is undoubtedly one of the hot prospects in Formula One at the moment. So my understanding was that they wanted him through the end of the year and next year. And McLaren said no. Now that leads you to two conclusions. One, McLaren just don't want to let him out. And secondly, they're looking to get him in a race seat for next year, potentially, and you'd imagine, replacing Fernando Alonso. So that's probably the most interesting thing that came out of this. I think if Toro Rosso had wanted him through to the end of the season, they would have accepted it. Now, the other side of it, of course, is from a personal perspective. Lando Norris is leading the Formula 2 championship, and unlike NASCAR, in Formula 1, you cannot compete in multiple series throughout a weekend. You can compete in one and one alone. So if he was to take this Toro Rosso driver, that would basically be sacrificing his Formula 2 championship, which would be a shame, really, because the kid's done pretty damn well to get to where he is. So maybe you can read that into it as well. But the fact that, my personal opinion is that the biggest takeaway from this is it shows that they could potentially thinking about him for a full-time drive next season.
Yeah, and building on that, so is the perhaps full-time drive for next season for Lando Norris, does that maybe mean that Alonso is going to be their full-time guy in their IndyCar program next year?
Ooh,
exactly, yeah, because it's like, you want Lando? No, you can't have because we have these plans that you don't know about.
Yeah, or that Lando Norris comes over to IndyCar next year.
Maybe he's got that. Either one, yeah. It could be Fernando, could be Lando, yeah.
Or they just don't want to give him to a rival team.
Exactly, yeah.
Who knows? Who knows? But it's interesting that... another interesting takeaway from this is... who are Toro Rosso? Toro Rosso are basically Red Bull's junior team, and they are the feeding ground for Red Bull junior drivers. Well, what's happened to all of them all of a sudden? Just put that out there. In the past, you look at the guys that have come through Red Bull and Toro Rosso, some phenomenal talents that have never made it into Formula, maintained their driving. You're just thinking of Sebastian Buemi, Jaime Alguersuari, Jean-Éric Vergne. You could list numerous drivers that have been in Toro Rosso and come through the Young Driver Scheme and never made it. And now they're going cap in hand to another team trying to get a driver from them. Okay, that's working well, guys.
Yeah. So going into Canada, who do you like? You like Ferrari or do you like Mercedes?
I don't think look past Mercedes. I mean, Montreal, fantastic circuit. I love that circuit. It's one of my favourite circuits on the year, in top three at least. And you can't really look past Mercedes and Hamilton. I mean, it's been his own personal playground for the last goodness knows how many years. I think he won his first race there back in 2007. I think he's won there at least five or six times. So,
how significant will the upgrades be that the teams usually bring?
Well, Mercedes have said they're not bringing an engine upgrade to Canada. Honda will be. but and Renault will be, but Renault turned around and said, yeah, we're going to bring upgrades, but so is everybody else. So that's almost them saying, they're probably sort of trying to quieten the expectations of that upgrade to the Renault package, which will really please Christian Horner and probably put another nail in the coffin of that Red Bull-Renault relationship. What Honda bring, that'll be interesting. They said they've got to be very careful with how they roll out those upgrades. I still, even with an older engine, I still see Mercedes to be dominant. I can't really see Ferrari getting the better of them, especially as Ferrari have lost a little bit of momentum through Spain and Monaco, where especially the upgrades they bought to Spain, just didn't really work. Monaco is its own unique beast in a way. So it'd be interesting to see if they can regain some of that ground they'd lost at Spain, because at Spain, Hamilton was just dominant. So we'll see what comes out this weekend. But if you're going to put 50 cents on anybody, it's going to be Hamilton, I think.
All right. So you have Hamilton for Canada. And Gray, who do you like?
I sneaked that one in there, didn't you? You weren't really asking.
I'm going to go Vettel in Canada.
And Seth, who do you like for Canada?
Bottas.
All right, so that leaves me with Kimi, I guess, or Danny Ricciardo. I don't know. I'll go Kimi. He hadn't won a race in forever, and I haven't picked a Formula One winner in forever, except the days y'all leave me Hamilton. So, but we've got just a few minutes left. So now, Richard, I want to ask you about the rumored IndyCar program for McLaren, and if you think the relationship with Honda is too fractured to continue, or if the fact that it's Honda HPD and not Honda Japan, that makes this a reality.
I don't think it's... I think they actually left on reasonably good terms, the Ferrari and... McLaren and Honda separation. I don't think it was as bad as everybody made it out to be. Certainly not on the same sort of level as Renault and Red Bull. So I think that it was more a case of McLaren took a risk with Honda, naturally. Honda took a risk, coming back into the sport, and I think both teams, both organizations know there's a risk involved, and they could probably turn around and say, you know what, guys, it just didn't quite work out, and good luck to both of you, sort of thing. So it wouldn't be a huge surprise if they go down that route with the Honda package. Obviously, they've been talking to, some of the teams they've been talking to about potentially merging with or getting support from, and initially, and then potentially opening up their own organization.
Zach Brown was in Detroit all weekend long with Gilles Ferrin by his side, and they spent most of their time with Michael Andretti. So,
nothing against Detroit, but it really is not somewhere you go on vacation, is it?
Exactly.
But, it's not coincidental that. And as you say, they've got Gilles Dufran in there, who, goodness me, going back to my Honda days when I was, working with Honda, he was our sporting director for a while. Didn't work out too well, I must admit. But anyway, that's another story. there's no smoke without fire, and, your marshmallows are getting pretty toasted on this rumor, aren't they? So I'm pretty certain if they are going to do something, it will be with Honda.
With that being said, we are just about out of time. We got a few minutes to just run around the table for a final thought from each of you gentlemen. So, Gray, I'll start with you. Your final thought for the night?
Looking forward to Michigan, see what kind of race that brings. We see a good competitive race with a lot of a lot of passing, a lot of lead changes up front. Don't know that we will, but it would be encouraging.
All right, Seth, final thought from you for the evening?
Well, in the Kanan Pro Series, we had a new first-time winner at Memphis this past weekend, Ruben Garcia Jr., who was in the Drive for Diversity program. It was his first career win, and also in the same race, Haley Deegan, who's also in that program, led the first laps of her career.
Man, good for both of them. You know what? Racing needs more diversity, and I applaud the diversity program for NASCAR. Now, Richard, do you have one final thought for the evening?
Yes, a little bit off topic. Something we don't normally mention is the two-wheel variety of racing, but this last couple of weeks, the Isle of Man TT races have been going on back over in Europe, and unfortunately, it's a pretty brutal race, and two young riders lost their lives this last couple of weeks. And, you know, if you get a chance to watch those races, those guys, whew, they are pretty damn brave, those guys, and deserve a lot of respect for what they do. And unfortunately, say a couple of guys have paid the ultimate price for that. It's a tough sport, and those guys, rather them than me.
They still do the sidecar races there too, don't they?
They certainly do. Yeah, there was a nasty accident with one of them the other weekend, last weekend. But I think, thankfully, they pretty much walked away from it. But it's unfortunately, it's almost an annual occurrence that at least one or two riders lose their life in that event.
I'm going to tell you what, British sidecar racing is one of my favorite things to watch. It's my little guilty pleasure because MAV-TV, MAV-TV shows it every Tuesday about lunchtime. And I just love to watch that. Those guys are nuts. And that stuff is so fun to watch, man. It's a brilliant form of racing.
Yeah, I think my godfather for a while... Yeah, one of my relatives for a while used to be one of those idiots that throw themselves around the sidecar part of it.
Yeah. It just looks like you watch this, like... It's like mind-blowing, but it's so fun to watch, and it's so competitive, and it's so good, and there's so many good forms of racing. But we are up against the clock, so I'm going to say goodnight to you, Gray Warren, Richard Uden, Seth Eggert. I appreciate all you guys coming on the show. I'm going to thank iHeartRadio, Hoobazoo Network, Hoobazoo Radio Network, and Spreaker. And guys, we'll talk to you next week. Good night.
Enter website.